My topic tonight, it's really interesting. I think it goes with your day long, maybe. We'll see how I approach it. It might go with your day long for next Saturday, but the topic for today is we all have a body. Do you have a body? Last I checked, we all have a body. And then I'll be looking at that sense that we have a body from three different angles, from an angle of practice, how we practice with the body, embodiment, what is embodiment? And then also the whole like wild, mysterious mystery of having a body. It's kind of an amazing miracle. It's a little boggling. So we all have a body. And then I was wondering if you felt moved, if you would put in the chat, how is your body doing in this particular moment? How is your body doing? And I'll read a few of those out loud if they come in. I think I'll be able to see them. Like, how is your body doing right now? I'm so curious. I'm not seeing anything. Stiff. I had vertigo last week. I did say right in this moment that I had vertigo last week. Let's see, tired, fatigued and sleepy with a bit of tightness. Ooh, relaxed. It's nice, right? The body is always shifting and changing. We can investigate what is the truth of the body in this moment. And we can also notice what we're acting out at any moment through the body. I mean, have you noticed that? Ooh, somebody was recovering from a bad fall 2.5 weeks ago. Oh, that's hard when we fall. Having a body can be hard, right? Have you noticed? You probably noticed by now. Having a body can be hard. And then we act out things through the body. The profound feelings, like sometimes, oh, somebody's itchy. I hope you don't have poison oak. sometimes like we can get a like a wash of rage, right? Like the rage happens in the body. Or sometimes if we're really happy, right, like the energy rises up into our face and eyes. Or if we're feeling tired, there's a heaviness through the body. And some of you are saying stiff, right? Like we can feel stiff and held. Our life actually happens through the body. It's not happening somewhere else. It's happening through the body. And then, our body's age. I've been starting to notice this. My body's aging. My husband, his neck is getting like kind of soft and wrinkly. And it's actually really tender and vulnerable to watch that. Like when I see his neck, it evokes such a kind of tenderness, that his neck is not the 30-year-old neck of when I met him, right? Like this is what it is to have a body. It's a kind of tender thing. And then we have, as a culture, chronic pain. I don't know. I know by the statistics that there are quite a few of us in this group that have chronic pain. In 2021, it was estimated that 20%, almost 21% of US adults experience chronic pain, which is actually 70 million people. I mean, think about that, 70 million people with chronic pain. And that 20% number as we age gets a higher percentage. So it's no joke to have a body, right? We have this thing that we have our life. Without your body, you would not have life. And we are not the body. These teachings teach us that we're not the body. And yet you would not be here without your body. You would not have the life that you have if you didn't have a body. And we can learn Dharma. We can learn Dharma through the body. So the Buddha's awakening is based on being within a body. The Buddha didn't teach awakening transcending the body or leaving. Actually, when he was practicing before his awakening, he learned all sorts of meditative techniques that were a kind of transcendence, But he saw that that was not, that didn't lead to the end of suffering. The Buddha, with his body, tried to transcend it in the sense of not eating. I mean, there's stories about how you could look at him from the front and you could see his spine through his belly. He practiced not eating so much in order to try and transcend the body. And he realized at some point that that was not actually onward leading, that that was not the way to freedom, that the awakening actually happens with this body that we have, the body that you have. So the Buddha also said that everything that we need for awakening is right here in this fathom-long body. So in your body, in the body that you have, maybe your body with chronic pain or illness, that everything that you need for awakening is right here, that we don't have to leave the body for awakening, that we can, through our practice, investigate and start to understand the insights of everything being not exactly perfect, right? Like, that's dukkha. We can see that that stress that arises through the body and with the body, that everything is not perfect. We can see through our practice the insight that it's not so personal, right? Like, the body's not so personal. We might think, maybe if we are younger or have had the good fortune and privilege of having a lot of good health, we might think that the body's personal, like that we're in charge of it, but it's not so personal, right? Like, the body has its ways. It lives out its life. I mean, my heart is beating, your heart is beating, and thank God I don't have to keep charge of beating my heart. Otherwise, I might forget and it wouldn't happen anymore. So the body in its own way is not so personal. It has its processes that are unfolding. It's not so personal that the body is a reflection of my genetic history. Your body is a reflection of your genetic history. The body is a reflection of the environment that we're raised in. The body is a reflection of the conditions that are happening. So we can, with our practice, investigate the insight that the body is not so personal. And we can also investigate the insight that the body is not permanent, that it's shifting and changing. It is a process that's unfolding, that it is not fixed. So we have, with our practice, we have given to us the four foundations of mindfulness in the Satipatthana Sutta. I'm sure many, if not all of you, have heard of this, the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations. The first foundation of mindfulness is mindfulness of the body. And again, the Buddha said that everything that we need for awakening is right in this first foundation or this first establishment. The other foundations, mindfulness of the mind, mindfulness of the Vedana, mindfulness of the Dharmas, the lists, like, those are important to pay attention to, but we don't have to. We can focus and practice with the body. It's right here with us. It goes everywhere with us. So the first foundation of mindfulness. And in this foundation of mindfulness, we're instructed to practice with our 32 parts. I'm sure some of you have done the 32 parts practice, where you go through and investigate your liver and your lungs and your brain and your urine and your feces and your phlegm and your pus. And every time I do this practice, I'm actually released into a sense of awe and mystery, which I think is kind of interesting. The sense actually of the whole thing, the 32 parts of the body. In this first foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body, we have the 32 parts. We also have the elements of our experience. So when we sit, when you're sitting right now, you might notice the temperature of your body, right? It's warm or cool, or some parts are warm, some parts are cool. That's the element of fire. We can notice the element of our digestion, right? That's the element of fire. We can also notice the element of air, which is any sense of movement. We can notice the element of earth, which is a sense of solidity in our practice. And these are different ways for us to practice with the body and start to understand it's not personal and not permanent. It's imperfect, impersonal, impermanent nature manifesting. So we have these different techniques, such as 32 parts of the body or the four elements. We also are invited in this first establishment of mindfulness to notice the posture. So you can notice what posture you're in right now. You don't have to correct your posture and suddenly sit up straight because I say the word posture. It's more just like, oh, how is the body being held right now? How is the posture? Am I sitting, standing, walking? So we can notice, and this can be thread not only in our meditation practice, but thread through our daily life. And we're also invited in this first foundation or this first establish of mindfulness to practice with the meditation on death. You know, I wonder if some of you have taken Spirit Rock or other teachers' offerings on, you know, Spirit Rock has a program, A Year to Live, which is really interesting to start to think about our own death and to contemplate that, not in a morbid way, but in a way that can start to point us to the preciousness of life. The body is not designed, it's not made, or it doesn't function to last forever. It's due, it's subject to the same forces of everything else, which is change. So the body is nature, and it's subject to the same forces as the world around it. And we're invited to practice with the body. The body itself is wild. It's untamable. And I mean wild, like nature is wild and untamable ultimately. It's the body is subject to pain, and it's unfolding. It's a process that's unfolding that we are called upon to love, that we are called upon to respect, and that the body itself as a doorway into compassion, especially because of the fact that there is so much dukkha, or there is so much that is hard to bear in the body. So we can, with our practice, work with these different practices from mindfulness, from the four foundations of mindfulness. We can also begin to investigate with our practice our relationship with the body. I mean, really, that might be enough to start to investigate our relationship to the body. That is, I wrote here that it's a small piece to work with, but maybe perhaps it's actually a really huge piece. Have you heard of the second arrow, this teaching where the first arrow happens? It's like we get shot with something and it's painful. Like, oh, I get a chronic illness, or I have a migraine, or I have like something, I fell down a few weeks ago, or like this first arrow happens all the time with the body. And the second arrow, this is where we can develop the path to freedom, is how we're relating that second arrow that so often happens is we shoot ourselves. We blame ourselves. We judge ourselves. We shame ourselves over that first arrow. So we can begin with the body to investigate with our practice, the second arrow. We can investigate our relationship to the body and investigate finding ways of freedom with the body. So the body is vulnerable. Vulnerable, that's another translation that I've been hearing recently for the word dukkha. The body is vulnerable. It's subject to that which is hard to bear. It's subject to stress. This is the first noble truth. There has pain. I mean, how many here in this group have chronic migraines or other chronic conditions? Let's see. 80% of people 55 and older have a chronic condition. 80% of people. That's amazing. That's most everybody, right? This is the first noble truth. So how we relate to this can be a doorway into great compassion. It can be a doorway into wisdom and compassion, where we start to see, right, those insights into the three marks. It's impermanent, it's impersonal, it's not perfect. And so, but instead, very often, maybe due to habit and due to cultural conditioning, we often fight with the body or struggle with the body, struggle with how we feel about the body. Sometimes we might have, due to cultural conditioning and habit patterns, we might have really like sort of chronic negative. Amazing. And so we can practice with that. We can practice with ourselves and how we talk to ourselves, how we talk to the body. We can learn to listen to the body. We can learn to have a refuge of practice where we can begin to invite the body to de-stress. So, for example, the other day I've been doing so much gardening. The spring was really late. I love gardening. Actually, I have a love-hate. To be completely honest, I have a love-hate relationship with gardening. I love gardening and I also kind of hate it. But at any rate, I've been doing so much gardening. I've been working in the soil and it's hard. It's hard on my body and my neck and back from leaning over and digging. We're feeling pretty like, uh-oh. And I knew, oh, I'm going to need to rest my body tomorrow. And like, I just knew. It's like, I'm going to need to rest my body. And then the next day happens. And even though I knew that, I went outside anyway, and I did a little more gardening, and then I got an injury. Like, have you done this before, right? Like, this is what we do with our bodies sometimes. We don't listen to the messages when it needs to rest. We just sort of expect it to keep going forward. And our practice can begin to help us shift our relationship with the body and let it be not so extractive, not such an extractive relationship or a manipulative or dominating or controlling relationship, and instead come into partnership, come into relationship, come into wise relationship with the body. Okay, so that's our practice when we're practicing with the body. I want to talk a little bit about embodiment. So one time many years ago at Spirit Rock, in the trailers where they used to have those classes in the trailers so many years ago, those low ceiling, dark little trailers where so much dharma happened. There was a teacher there. I can't even remember who the teacher was. I think it was a woman, but I don't even know. It was so long ago, like 2 decades ago. This teacher said, "The body doesn't lie." And I was like, what? I don't know about that. And I didn't understand it. And I thought about it for a really long time, like a really long time, you know, 2 decades. But then it turns out actually the body doesn't lie. Like if I'm overwhelmed with craving, it's right there in my body. If I'm angry, it's right there in my body. If some wholesome states are happening, if there's some generosity or there's some gratitude, it's right there in my body. Mudita, joy, right? It's right there in the body. The body doesn't lie. And the actions of the body often are an embodiment of what is being played out either consciously or unconsciously, right? Did you ever find yourself acting something out and then you're like, oh gosh, I must be really angry about something, all right? Like it's like the body is doing its thing. We don't even consciously know sometimes. So the actions of the body are an embodiment of what is being played out. The body doesn't lie. The body is always in the present moment. So there could be craving coming through the body, pain coming through the body, joy coming through the body, contentedness coming through the body. The body is always in the present moment. Rage happens in the body. Peace happens in the body. You could say with our practice, so to tie in that piece of practice, you could say that with our practice, embodiment is the bridge between our understanding and our actions. So the present moment is the place where we act out the truth of what is happening, and our practice is a development of wisdom and compassion, which is going to then be manifest embodied through the body. So our goal with meditation, with spiritual practice, is to bring the ideas, wisdom and compassion, renunciation, all these really beautiful concepts that are just ideas, to bring them into action. So what is actually non-harming and how does it show up in the body? Can we actually practice non-harming when we sit down to meditate or when we're in our daily life doing our work or the dishes or whatever it might be? So, what is the embodiment of love? I have a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. He says, Buddhism has to do with your daily life. Your suffering, with your suffering and with the suffering of the people around you. You have to learn how to help a wounded child while still practicing mindful breathing. Action should be meditation at the same time. Doesn't that sound like embodiment? He's talking about the action of caring for yourself and caring for the wounded child in front of you or whatever's in front of you, right? It's the embodiment of these teachings. So then, shifting into mystery. The body is how we live our life. We could actually talk about, I could say this talk is a ode. It's an ode to the mystery and awe of having a body. How does it really come to be? It's really kind of a miracle that every single one of us at some point was inside of another human being. Like, whoa, that's not something as an adult I think about too much, right? Like at one point we were all inside another human being. And then how does it come to be that what we eat gets turned into me or you, like whoever's eating, right? Like the kale and the potato chips turn into hair and bones and fingernails, right? Like it's kind of really quite a mystery. And also, did you know that your tongue has about 8,000 taste buds? That's a lot, right? That's not a very big space. Oh, maybe you have a bigger tongue than me, but it's 8,000 taste buds. And that the only muscle that only tire that never tires. So the only muscle in your body that never tires is the heart. By 70 years of age, your heart has beat about 2.5 billion. That's with the B, 2.5 billion times by 70, more or less, maybe, I don't know, something. And then the entire surface of your skin is replaced every month. So it's like you get new skin every month. That's also something I'm glad I don't have to go out and do. It seems arduous, right, to make new skin. Because we get the surface of the skin being replaced, we have about 1,000 different skins in your life. That's weird. Anyway, I don't know. I got that fact off the internet that we have 1,000 different skins. Okay, so then every second, your body produces 25 million new cells. That means in 15 seconds, you will have produced more cells than there are people in the United States. That's kind of amazing. And then, let alone actually, like we have a microbiome that we're full of, I don't know, fungus and bacteria and other organisms that help us digest our food. Like, I mean, I think it's me that's digesting my food, but actually, I couldn't do it without the little bacterias and stuff in there, and then all the little mites that live in my eyelashes and my eyebrows. It's kind of amazing. I'm a whole community. You're a whole community together. We make a big community of wildness. Okay. So there's anywhere between 60,000 and 100,000 miles of blood vessels in the human body. So inside your body right now, you have between 60 and 100,000 miles of blood vessels. So if we could somehow take those blood vessels out of you and string them out end to end, that would be long enough to travel around the entire Earth more than three times. Like, that's so crazy. Okay, and that your bones are stronger, pound for pound, your bones are stronger than steel. Also, this one, I thought this one was really interesting, that the body, that your body, my body, bodies give off a tiny amount of light. It's too weak for the human eye to see, but that we give off a tiny amount of light. And that information in your nerves, information zooms along in there in the nerves at about 248 miles per hour. And then the last sort of funny fact I'm going to give you is that your nose can recognize about a trillion different smells. That's kind of cool. Okay, so to finish, I have a story tonight that hopefully will maybe tie some of these concepts together. So in 2018, so however many years ago that was now, in 2018, I went to Vallecitos Mountain Retreat Center. I don't know, some of you might have been there. It's in New Mexico, it's in the high country, it's at high elevation. Like 9,000 feet, it's on the Continental Divide, and it's a meditation center. Erin Treat, it's her center, and it's a really incredibly beautiful place. And I wanted to go there and spend some large amount of time and really dive into practice. So I decided to go for 5 weeks in the summer of 2018, and I would do work trade so that I could afford to go for that long. And then I had all these plans. I had these like aspirations, really. I would go, I would do my work trade, and when I didn't have to do whatever task needed to be done, that would be part of my practice, right? Service, doing those tasks, but also that any of the free time that I would be able to sit in the meditation hall and participate in all the retreats. So they were shorter retreats, they were coming and going. And I was there and I would just sit in. That was my plan anyway, to sit in on these retreats. So I showed up, and the first retreat was a very short retreat. And I knew the teacher, and she was like, "Sure, that's great. You can participate all you want. Just get your work done and then come on into the hall." And I was like, "Yay, this is great." I was very happy about it. And that was a short retreat. So I think like on the fourth day they had left, and the next retreat was coming. And the teachers didn't know me. They didn't know my practice. And they said, "Oh, we're sorry. You can come into the hall, but only in the morning with the guided meditation and the Dharma talk." So I could come into the hall twice a day, and that was that. And I became very upset and actually kind of outraged too. Like, wow, I'm at a meditation center and they're telling me I can't meditate. I was like kind of out, like had some righteousness about it, but I was mostly really upset. So I helped check people in and I left. So there are all these new people show up and I left so I could go cry. You know, it's like the body, right? Like the embodiment of the upset was a cry. So I'm walking on a trail and I'm crying and I'm not looking up because I'm crying. I'm like completely caught in my dukkha, in my second arrow and wanting things to be different. I was completely caught in this right in my body. I was embodiment in that moment of being caught and I'm not paying attention. And suddenly, right in front of me, not even 10 feet in front of me, there was a massive elk. Have you seen an elk before? They're massive. It was like a wall. It was like so big. And I stopped. And right away, the whole thing dropped. Like in my mind and heart, the whole thing drops. So sometimes when we're upset, we might tell ourselves, like, "Oh, it's not that big a deal. It's going to change. Don't be upset." But we're still kind of secretly upset, right? But that moment, that was an embodiment because it was complete and total. It wasn't my mind. It wasn't a top-down thing. It wasn't my mind saying, "Don't be upset." It was a complete stop in my tracks. The mystery of seeing an elk, I don't know, it just cleared the whole thing. And I realized kind of instantly, like, "Oh, I can just practice outside. I don't need the meditation hall. The Dharma is right here on the trail with the elk. The Dharma is right here in my body. I don't need to be in the meditation hall." And I turned around. I didn't keep going. I couldn't keep going. The elk was in the way. I was kind of afraid of it. Then I went back and just had the rest of my day, and it completely cleared. That's what an insight is like. It's not an idea. It's a felt sense. It's an embodiment of that letting go. So then, 2 days later, same trail, same place on the trail, there was a dead elk. I don't know what the elk died of. I don't know if it was the same elk. In some ways, it doesn't matter. It's pointing to actually some sort of mystery. So I was like, okay, I'm here, I'm practicing. This is one of the foundations of mindfulness of death, contemplation of death. So every day, that was maybe a week into the 5 weeks. So every day for a month, I went and visited the elk on my meditation retreat. This decomposing, it was gross. It was gross. Like, I'm not saying it wasn't gross, but I did it. I went and I watched this process and I started to see, because I was quiet, because I was practicing so much, I started to see, like, oh, the elk has a pelvis. I have a pelvis. The elk has a spine. I have a spine. The elk died. I could die. I'm going to die just like the elk. I'm not that different from the elk. And I realized through this contemplation, actually, that there were some things that were really important to me that I wanted to do in my life, and that the time was now to do it. And again, it wasn't like an intellectual idea of deciding. It was like the whole system, the heart and the mind and the body came together through the contemplation of the corpse of the elk. Like, oh, time is very precious. It's important. It's very important to tell my loved ones I love them. It's very important to do what's important to me in my life, which for me is Dharma, meditation and art and my community. And that was important for me to find a way to center that in my life a bit more. And so I did. I came home and did that. And that's another longer story. But this sense, right? The sense of mystery and the sense of how we hear these practices. Like, I can tell you, oh, like mindfulness of the body and the 32 parts, right? I was doing that. I was seeing the elk's pelvis. I was seeing, like, feeling my pelvis, seeing the elk's hips and legs and spine and skull. In the same way, in contemplating the death, like, these practices actually can lead us and do lead us to the development of wisdom and compassion. I mean, straight up wisdom and compassion, the sense of what is important for me and what was important for me to do with my life. So I encourage you actually to practice with your body, whichever body that you have, even if your body is feeling really painful, or maybe especially if your body is feeling really painful. I've been listening. Jon Kabat-Zinn has a new book out on mindfulness for pain, for chronic pain. So if you do have chronic pain, I recommend getting that. You know, he developed mindfulness-based stress reduction, I think in, oh no, I can't remember what decade. Some of you know, I'm sure of it. But at any rate, when he developed it, mindfulness-based stress reduction, he was taking these practices, mindfulness of the body, he was taking them and giving them to people that had chronic conditions that the medical field couldn't do anything for, that had come to the end of what the medical field could do. And he was given these patients, and guess what? It turns out that mindfulness of the body can lead us to freedom. To awakening, that our awakening isn't separate from the body that you have. It's right here with the body that you have, even if it has chronic pain, even if it's not exactly as you wish it were. It's actually quite a mystery, the body. It's quite a beautiful gift. All right, that's what I have for you all. I do have actually a couple of, like, I'd love to hear your comments and questions because I actually learned from you all. So if anybody felt willing to offer a comment or a question or something, you know, it doesn't have to be a question, you know, just something that you know. I also had some questions for you that you could speak on or think on this week, which are, what makes it easier for you to be in touch with your body? What makes it easier for you to be in touch with your body? Do you see value in being in touch with your body? How do you understand embodiment? It's the action of bringing our values into action. What is the embodiment of love? How do you know when your actions are in alignment with your values? And then finally, what is your relationship with your body? These are some thoughts for you. And then I'll just leave it open. So I can't see on my device. I cannot see everybody. So if you raise your hands, let's see. Okay, Deborah, I've got Deborah. You can just unmute yourself and let's hear what you have to say.
I love you. You are such a gift and such a blessing. Thank you for being here. Thank you for talking about this. You talk in a way that reminds me of me, and I'm not saying that in any kind of arrogance. This has been so perfect. My body stopped being normally well when I was 41. I'm now 74. And it's been an interesting journey, and I'm still traveling that journey. And sometimes I just, many, many years ago, I was in contact with a woman who practiced Tibetan yoga, and she sent me an email one time and said, thank your body for carrying you this far. Mm-hmm. That was such a gift. And so every morning when I wake up, I put my hand on my heart. Sometimes it's the afternoon, but I put my hand on my heart and I put my hand on my abdomen and I thank all my body parts, even if they're hurting, which they start to do within 10 or 30 seconds after I open my eyes. And I just thank all those body parts for carrying me this far. So when you were mentioning the veins and the heart and all the body parts, I just laughed my way through this talk. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. I love that quote. Thank your body for carrying you this far. This, yeah. Does anybody else have anything for us? Yeah, please, Karina. Is it, am I saying your name right?
Karina.
Karina, okay, thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Ashley. That was really great. You know, I turned 65 in October and it seemed like my body just fell apart. I couldn't believe it. I got COVID on my 65th birthday and it has been one thing after another. And, but I, you know, because of practice, because of meditation and slowing down, because you have to, you know, I just could really see, always see the gift in everything and see, you know, why things happen. And also just the inevitability, like you said, of, you know, just knowing that, yeah, we're breaking down just like a car, you know, we're slowly breaking down. For me, it's challenging because I work with people with pain and, you know, I'm an alternative care practitioner. So I add on this idea that I shouldn't fall apart. I should be better than, I should be able to keep myself healthy and fine all the time. So that's another added thing. But I also, the question about, you know, how do you get in touch with your body? With staying inside for so long during COVID, I just developed this stretching routine. It's nothing fancy, but it's just, you know, just rolling around and, you know, just moving everything. And it's just so valuable because it's just, it's loving my body. It's getting in touch with it. And it's just a practice like meditation, you know, it's just giving back, like you were saying, you know, to be thankful for how our bodies carried us this long. It's like giving back. So yeah, that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope you feel better soon. Anybody else? Yeah, Corey, please.
I don't know what I do without the body. The body is my gateway. It's my, like, every morning I get up and I pat my body and I do Qigong, and I cannot sit and meditate in the mornings without it. It's like, if I'm not in my body, my meditation is just you know, I'm such a heady person generally. So it's essential. It's absolutely essential. And I do the fire, the four elements. I do a fifth element with finding space in the body and outside the body and do some Qigong. And then I finally sit and the sitting is totally about the body too. And anytime I go off, the breath is not as strong for me, but the body is. And so then it's feel the gravity. And, you know, often I will go to some place like you did tonight where you were identifying places that are kind of unusual that people don't think about. I'll go right to the back because, you know, everything is so visual. And the back is like this hidden gem for me. So I'll go to the back and sense the back against the chair or whatever as a place to kind of come back.
Thank you. That's beautiful. I knew you all would have lots of wisdom, actually. I love that you're saying the back is a hidden gem for embodiment. And then also how you're reflecting that without your Qigong or having the body be a resource because of the headiness. I mean, our culture really rewards headiness. I think many of us are very lost in thought. And so finding ways to reconnect. Thank you, Corey. That was beautiful. Is there anybody else? We have time for one more if there's anybody. Oh, yeah, Linda.
So I use my body to tell me if what I'm doing is right, is in alignment. The thing that really brought this home for me was I was my mother's durable power of attorney for health and stuff, and there was some decisions that had to be made, and I was agonizing over it, and you know, my brothers and sisters all had their opinions on what should be done, and I tried to speak with I spoke with this gentleman that was her a deacon at her church. And interestingly enough, he was also the lawyer that had helped us review her trust when she was still cognizant. And he and I talked this out for quite a while. And when we came up with the decision on what to do, my body just flooded with, it told me that it was exactly the right decision to be made. I was so relaxed and like this tension had left. And it's like, yes, that was the right thing. That's the right decision. So I try to listen to my body, but that just knocked me out because it was so visceral.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that piece in. I had forgotten about that part of it in writing this talk. Like for me, I have like we were talking about taking some trees down to clear some trees, and I was so anxious about it, and that was my body saying no. I was like, ugh. And that was like, our body does actually help us with these, like when it's the right decision. Anyway, thank you for bringing that in. That's beautiful. See, I knew you all would have good things to say.